You're listening to the Managing Partners Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Daisy. We interview top lawyers about how they're growing their firm. Today, I have a really cool guest. I actually met her husband at a recent conference in Chicago, and we got time to hang out and chat and learn more about their firm. When we got back, found out Stacy has a podcast, wanted to have her on my podcast, so excited to have her here to talk about a pretty cool topic today about client journey, and it's not something that we've specifically covered in detail on this show. So for all my attorneys out there listening, try to improve. She's going to be really diving into the client journey and her experience within that and management within her firm. So I'm excited about that. So Stacy, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Kevin. I'm happy to be here.
Excellent. And you're in Florida. Is it Parkland, Florida?
It's Parkland, which is about 20 minutes from Boca Raton, which most people have heard of.
Sure.
It's a nice rainy day, as usual in the summer here, but I'm happy to be here to talk about client journey with you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. We're getting some rain here too, up in Virginia. Entrepreneurship, business, operations, all that stuff. I'm excited about all those things all the time. So just every little insides and outs of business. So excited to talk about today. But first, always like to talk about you first and your story. So, you know, tell us kind of your story, your journey to becoming an attorney, where you're at today, and a little bit more about the firm and what you all specialize in.
Okay. So I graduated law school up in New Jersey back in 1997, but I had gone to University of Miami for college. So I wanted to return back to Florida because I was not used to those winters anymore up in New Jersey. So I came back to Florida, took the bar, and at the time, the only jobs that seemed to be advertising were in the area of personal injury and a lot in workers' compensation, and it was mostly defense. So basically, I took what I could get, which at first was working for a one-man operation. He did personal injury. Shout out to Ted Enfield for giving me my very first job back then. But I didn't love personal injury. I was there only a few months, and I met someone at a deposition who said, I really think you would like workers' compensation. It's more laid back, you know, there's no jury, it's more administrative, but I think it would be great. And we are hiring at Liberty Mutual, so you'd be doing defense. So that's where I got my start, was workers' comp defense for Liberty Mutual. And after that, I wound up working at AIG doing workers' comp defense, and that was another like 11 years or so. I meet David at multiple depositions. I had a lot of cases against his firm. So David and my other partner, William, they worked together for a workers' compensation claimants firm, and I was on the other side doing defense. So we would always have cases against each other. The rest is history. I wound up getting married to David, and literally maybe 3 months into the marriage, AIG did a mass layoff. And so I got laid off after 11, 12 years there. So basically was at a crossroads. It was either I was going to go do defense again for somebody else in my 40s or start my own firm. And that's where this idea was born. David said, you know, I really think you should just start your own thing, switch sides to representing the claimants. I'll help you. So it started as the Isaacs Law Firm. It was just me. And eventually David and William joined me.
That is an interesting story right there. So you can be married and continue to fight each other, I guess, too long. So
exactly. You got to join forces.
Yeah, so interesting story. And David, Ben, for anyone listening, may know who he is. He's pretty dialed in, and he's out and about, and is part of some groups out there that I'm familiar with. So, and I originally said, hey, David, come on the show. And he's like, my wife would be way better. And obviously, she is. So
that was nice of him. So yeah, we started as, it was called Ben Harrow and Isaacs. That's each of our last names. However, we found that clients wouldn't really remember that. And so David actually had the great idea that our name should be what we do. So it eventually went from Ben Harrow and Isaacs to Work Injury Rights. And that's what we do, is protect injured workers' rights.
Yeah, no, another good move, I think. So if y'all, you know, listening, it's workinjuryrights.com. Super simple, says what they do, and then it's easy to remember. And it's just a good domain to have as well. So yeah, I like that a lot. And, you know, there's so many law firms that have all these long names and you can't always spell them. Trust me, because I have lots of guests and clients that I'm always, like, I make up abbreviations or I'll cut it down to the first person's last name because sometimes they just get out of hand, you know? So, and if that's your .com, geez, it's just hard. And then a partner leaves and now you got to change it. And there's the implications of SEO and all the other things that come with that. So it's good to have a name that you can run with, and a .com like you guys have is great. So kudos.
Thank you.
So let's talk about more about, you know, what you're passionate about and kind of what you want to talk about today. And that is client journey. Something that I focus on here at my agency is client journey. I also call it client experience, kind of different things there a little bit, but we're always trying to improve that and say, all right, what can we do better? Because I don't think you ever have it perfect. It's constant work as things change on how can we handle this. And so for me, different than for you, I mean, a client signs on with us, it's hopefully 12 months to years. And it's a very intimate kind of relationship. You know, I just want to let you kick it off, but let's get into the client journey and we'll go down the rabbit hole.
Sure. So admittedly, in the beginning, we had no client journey. You know, we were very focused on just results of the case and whether or not the client stayed updated throughout his or her case, or whether they left feeling connected to the firm and that they may come back again down the road, wasn't really in our minds. It was all about making money, which we are contingency lawyers here in Florida. So we don't get paid at all until the end of the case. There are times when we could get paid by the insurance company during the case, but primarily we just work on contingency. So, you know, when you're starting out your own law firm, you're really focused on bringing in those cases and getting them settled and getting good results so that you get paid and you can pay your bills. During that time, we made a decision that we wanted to grow. We no longer wanted to just be this three-person operation. We needed to get staffed up for starters, because at the beginning, and I'm sure any entrepreneur, whether it's law or anything else, can relate, you're doing your own intake calls, you're doing your own scheduling, you're doing everything yourself. And there is only so much that you could do and still deliver good results to the client. So we started by getting staffed up. And by that, I mean assistants, legal assistants, schedulers. From there, we then hired our first associate, which was a game changer. Because when you have somebody who can be out there attending the events, depositions, mediations, you can focus on other things like how to get cases, which is what David Ben focuses on, how to manage your attorneys that are working for you, which is what William focuses on, and then how to make the clients happy, which is what I focus on. So I'm really the director of client relations. And we started at the beginning. We said, if we were clients of this firm, how would we like to be welcomed? So it all starts from the moment somebody calls into the firm. So they call in. It's very important that they're greeted by somebody who's empathetic, because our clientele is calling at a time when they are very stressed out, injured, scared. If they're calling an attorney, they're really at the point where they feel helpless.
Yeah.
Right? Because if they felt like they could navigate the system on their own, they wouldn't be calling. So it is essential that whoever is answering the phone, whether it's 3 a.m. or, you know, 10 a.m., shows some empathy for what they're going through, as opposed to when we were taking these calls on our cell phones. Maybe we sounded a little irritated. It was after hours, but we had to get that client signed up. So it does begin with the very first person who touches the case, and that's the person on intake.
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah, it makes such a difference. And that person will actually solicit reviews. They'll say, you know, if you don't mind, please let me know how your intake experience was. So I compare it to, you know, if you've ever, Kevin, had to call a doctor's office, right? Say you want to get your child into an appointment. If that whole phone call is annoying, all they care about is getting your insurance information. They don't care that your kid is sick and you're asking for an appointment. They're like, yeah, we could see you next week. It's just, it may leave you with a bad impression. So yeah, we're all about that client experience being good from the beginning. Okay, so that's intake. Once the case has been retained, it can't just stop there. So the legal assistant and the attorney who are assigned to that case, they have to fulfill promises that intake has made. Intake says, you're going to be contacted by a lawyer within such and such time. If we fail to do that, believe me, I get that escalation call. I'll get an unhappy client. Hey, you promised me I was going to hear from somebody. Isn't my case important to you? So it's critical.
So intake's kind of setting expectations. And if you don't meet those, that's a problem for sure.
That is a big problem. And that's where you break the trust. We are pretty hard on our staff and our attorneys about fulfilling that promise. And, you know, getting them to understand that, it takes some massaging, but you just have to, you have to think of it personally. If somebody promised me something, I want them to do it. Especially something like your case. I often have tried to put myself in the position of, say, if my mom had a case, which she did have a personal injury case, and I was very particular about who I sent her to because I said, who's going to really treat her well and communicate with her? So at Work Injury Rights, we didn't want to be a mill. We wanted to be the opposite, give that boutique feel, even though now we have, I don't know, 40 employees, but still treat every client delicately so that they have an excellent client experience. Because if you don't, and I know this from, we just had our 10-year anniversary in business. So,
all right, congratulations.
Thank you. I know from the metrics, just comparing maybe our termination rate from before we had the client journey till now, there's hands down less terminations. I think they say that the number one reason people fire their attorneys is a lack of communication. So a large part of client journey is these touch points in the case when you want to contact your client. You can't just go 6 months and not speak to them.
I think too, it's from a employee retention side, I have a lot of employees that, I think I'm at 45 or something like that myself. So I've had a lot of employees come from other big agencies and they're like, they left because it was just a madhouse. They didn't feel like their clients were getting taken care of. So they just didn't feel good about the work they were doing.
Right.
And so I think on the flip side, a side effect is that your staff is probably happier because they know that they're not behind, they're keeping up with communication. And that probably makes them feel better about what they're doing.
Right. And in order for them to, I know you're big on, you know, the culture of the operation. In order for them to buy into our culture, they need to feel like they are just as important as the lawyer handling the case, right? And I say this all the time. Intake is critical because we would have no firm without these people who are getting the cases. And then the legal assistants are so important because they have a lot of communication with the clients. The attorneys can't take every single call every day. They're out mediating cases. They're attending depositions. So the legal assistants are actually a very big part of the client experience. And if you look at our reviews, you'll see a lot of the legal assistants mentioned by name. The clients are very happy. You know, they'll say, Rebecca always took my call. She always treated me nicely. Clients hate to hear your attorney's in court. They'll call you back. They want the problem solved as soon as possible. So just part of that client experience is getting somebody, a legal assistant, a paralegal, somebody on the phone to listen to them. I've really found, at least in our area of law, a large part of what the client wants is just to be heard and validated. They're frustrated. It's frustrating to deal with an insurance company and have someone tell you what doctor you have to go to and have somebody not send your check on time. So we have to be there to really validate. And I guess the biggest word is empathize.
Yeah. I mean, that's a huge part of this is they're not just a number, you know, you're really having the ability, the staff to take time to talk with these folks and not just wait for them to call, but being proactive. I know for me, like if I've had a client call me to tell me something that they came up with or something that's wrong or some new market initiative and we didn't initiate it, then that's a problem. You know, we need to be ahead of that. We need to be proactive. Calling our clients to say, hey, nothing new's changed. There's nothing to update you on, but I want to let you know. Hopefully we'll have something, you know, hopefully I'll have some more news next week, you know, whatever it may be.
Right. Even if it's just an email, a text, some form of communication so that they don't feel like no one cares about their case. Because oftentimes when someone is firing another law firm and calling us, that's the complaint. I'll say, you know, what did that attorney do wrong? And it's like, I could never get a hold of them, or I always had to call them. No one updated me. So even if there's no update, they just want to either vent for a little or they just want to hear from you.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so, you know, if you can build out a program like you guys have and have someone dedicated to it like you, I love how you guys have split up the roles, you know, and responsibilities. And that's nice having partners there where you can do that. I know for me, my partner is all operations and the books, you know, accounting, expenses, stuff like that. And I'm sales and marketing. So it's just nice to be able to like set that aside, who's best at what, and then own that piece.
Exactly. Exactly.
So if you have partners out there listening, you know, do you have that structure? I assume you might have that, but have you really defined kind of where each partner has a strength and what they should be in charge of? And then, of course, bring in experts or other people, consultants, you know, or hire people where you're not good. So
and we each, for the most part, stay in our own lanes. I don't handle any of the marketing. That's David. I don't manage the lawyers. That's William. And they don't deal with the client journey because it would just be, you know, too many cooks in the kitchen. We have a very specific client journey and it's been going, you know, very well. So
I love it. I love it. I think it's huge to have those, the proactiveness and follow up. And the biggest complaints I hear or see is, yeah, the communication with the lawyers or them not getting back to them or not being available. I think that's across the board. That's a huge problem. And an intake, you mentioned intake, but I just had a client email me yesterday and say, hey, Kevin, do you know anyone that can help us? We don't have a lead problem because they hired us, but they're not closing and intaking as many as they should be. So, you know, he's got an intake problem, you know, a sales problem, I guess, if you will. So,
yeah,
you know, that's a big piece, you know, what you said, that first interaction is when it all starts. And I would take it even a step further. Your website, a video that they saw of you, your social media, that might be the first interaction, right? Are they impressed? How'd that go? You know, did they want to call or not? So as marketers, we take it back to like the first time they found you online or whatever it may be, that's they have an impression of your brand, your firm. And then when they call, does that match, right? In your case, right. You guys are, you're thinking about that whole thing. So just something to think about for one listening. It's like, think about all that stuff. Anything out there about you, what you've said, written, like that translates over to like, you know, how you represent yourself.
Definitely. And for people listening, it can't just be when you're hiring your intake person or people, it can't just be the aggressive sales. That's great. And you need that. But what I have found didn't work was people that were just hungry to close and get us the case. The case turned out to be terrible or wasn't even really workers' comp. You have to find people that are able to empathize, that have patience, and that really understand the type of client that you want. And when I am asking other attorneys to refer cases to work injury rights, so when I'm meeting with personal injury lawyers, they really like that we have a whole intake team. So the referral, they're going to get chased. They're not going to just disappear.
That's great. If other attorneys around you, referral partners, They know how you operate. You know, they know the client's going to get taken care of. Because it might be a client of theirs that just, they don't do workers' comp, right? So, but they go, you know what? I'm confident that they'll take care of this client, this person. Yeah, you're going to get a lot more referrals and respect in the market. That's for sure.
And the other really important piece of this puzzle is that in this day and age, reviews are currency. And it can work to your detriment. You know, one unhappy client has the right to leave a bad review. So the way we handle these, we actually respond to the reviews. You know, if I can't find that person in our system, I'll say, you know, I'm really sorry. I don't see your name in our system, but please call me directly. I'm one of the owners. I had a situation where I stayed at a Marriott property and they emailed me, thank you for checking in. And, you know, I am the manager and please let me know how it's going. And I guess because I am, this is what I do every day, client satisfaction, I responded right away. I was like, to be honest, it's been a big hassle since I got here. There was nobody at check-in. This happened, that happened. Nobody replied to that email. So I was just thinking, you know, why did you solicit it if you're not even going to respond? But reviews are important, and especially the younger generations, they literally base what lawyer, what doctor they're going to go to based upon reviews. So if you have no client journey or nothing in place to set yourself apart, they're not going to call you. I mean, unless it's word of mouth or something, but people do read reviews.
Oh man, it's spot on. I mean, everything that we do marketing wise, like the review piece is so huge, and to have a client that takes that serious, and we work with our clients all the time to put things in place. Like, how are you getting reviews? Well, we just kind of get them, you know, here and there. No, you need to have like a process baked into your client journey, right? To where, when do you ask for a review? You know, how are you gauging the client and where they're at? If they're happy, you know, when can you ask for it? And sometimes you can do it well before the case settles or whatever it may be. So we help our clients like, hey, here's, equip your staff. You know, here we can put QR codes if you have clients coming in and things like that. We'll do a bunch of stuff like that to try to help them. But your online presence or even a referral, they're going to go look at those reviews. And Google values those reviews more than anything. So you got to be consistently getting reviews too. You know, if your last review is a year ago, you know, people kind of...
something's amiss.
Yeah.
Right.
So yeah, that should be a part of your process. And respond to every review. Good, bad, doesn't matter. You should have a process. We do this, like we have Zapier, and it'll zap and say, hey, we just got this review. And if it's a 5-star or 4-star, we actually have some automated responses that will go out for our clients too. If it's anything below a 4, it gets handled and says, hey, this is a 3, 2, or 1. We need to address it, talk about it, and write up a response. And your response should never be debating them while you're right and they're wrong on public reviews. So
right. Clients always right.
Yeah, do what you did. Hey, call me, reach out, we'll address it. Keep it at that. And that way people see, okay, the owner responded pretty much immediately and said, we'll address this and take care of it for you. That makes a 1-star not seem so bad.
And sometimes they will remove it. Sometimes it's a misunderstanding and you can get them to remove it or change it. So it's definitely worth responding to. And I have found that the best time, at least for the attorney to request the review, would be at the end when they're giving the client the check. That's usually a happy day.
You hold on to it. You be like, wait, oh, review.
Yes. I love the QR codes. We do that as well. We give a closing gift, a little something, so that they don't forget about us. Because you'd be surprised how many people at deposition, they'll say, yes, I had prior cases. I don't remember that lawyer's name. You don't want them to forget you. And if they have a stellar experience, they're not going to forget you.
This is huge that you guys have this program, and a lot of law firms do not, because I know a lot of law firms that do not. Yeah, everything you're saying, I think, is a compounding effect, everyone. The reviews, and managing that, right? That's a big piece. Mm-hmm. If you're responding to all of them, again, even if you get some bad ones in there, it's still, that shows that you're responsive, you're doing something about it. And then with this journey, you're measuring stuff along the way, and then you're finding ways to improve it. If you're just running and gunning, like they started out, how they started, as a new business owner, you're just trying to make it happen, right? You don't really care about all that stuff. But if you really want to grow and scale, you'll be able to make changes where you see areas that you can make improvements if you have a process like they do. And then the referrals that you're creating, potential future referrals from every single client that they've had, is a referral source because of the process they have with that client, right? And what the journey that they took them through. So it's just, I think, again, compounding effect that this has over years to where you become a powerhouse and a brand that someone can't mess with. So,
yes. And the best, and I think most inexpensive referral source is a client, because you've already obtained that case however you got it, right? But when they refer their whole church and their mother and their friends and coworkers, those are the best. Then we have no referral fee. And then you know you did something right if someone says, hey, I had a great experience with this law firm, call them. So that is the goal. And, you know, there's a lot more to the client journey. There's various touch points during the case you would reach out. Obviously, if they have a deposition, you want to explain thoroughly what that is, a mediation. So we do have all of these videos that get texted to them.
Oh, nice. I like that.
Yeah, it took over a year to really roll everything out, but I can tell you it's well worth it.
So I assume there's a lot of steps in there, a lot of other things in there. But I think this hopefully will get people to think, you know, about what they're doing, and maybe not as complex and deep that you guys got, but I'm sure, you know, Stacy would love to chat with any attorney that's got questions or, you know, wants to connect about it, because it sounds like there's a lot more to it than what we've talked about so far that we probably can't get into today. But 100%, yeah, I have a team member, Rebecca. She's our director of operations. She's in Miami, and that's her whole job is all the same stuff you're doing. And so it's looking at everything. You know, we have a problem. This client wasn't okay. What happened? Let's figure that. Oh, let's change the process. And now we do this way. And then they go to me, which I do sales and marketing, and they go, hey, we got to fix some stuff over here. What was said in the sales process made this client have some unrealistic expectations 5 months down the road. Like, oh, okay, well, let's fix that. And so, you know, again, tracking this stuff and having a plan and a process allows you to find those improvements and then ask your clients. And when you have those good relationships, you can ask your clients, hey, what can we do better? What can we do to improve? And we send out a client survey every month to every single client.
Oh, every month. That's awesome.
Every month. And it's like, what is your revenue last month? How many leads you get? What can we do better? And not all of them respond every month, but we just want to know that we're doing a good job. And, you know, and that's just the way to check in. But yeah, I love it. And if I think, you know, if you're like a state planning attorney or different types of, if you're not selling a case, you know, this could look different for you. Obviously, you can probably ask for a review earlier on if you're doing like a will or trust or something like that. But it could be different for each of you out there. But I think I agree with you, Stacy, like in the case of what you all do or personal injury, probably best to ask a review at the end that when everything went well. But I think in some cases, you know, if it's more of a long-term, you know, kind of like business lawyer or something like that, then I would ask for a review sooner.
Yeah, you know, I would think in the area of family law, that's something that they should ask periodically during the case. And again, you know, I always just bring it back to how would I feel if I were a client of a law firm? If nobody ever called me since the day I signed up, I would not be happy, especially in the, like if I, God forbid, a divorce or if I needed that type of lawyer, I would want to hear from them constantly.
Well, no, I think that's a good, easy way for people to get their head around it. Exactly what you just said. How would you feel? And if you were to call your own law firm right now, and what's that experience like? And actually, you probably should mystery shop your own firm every once in a while. And what is it like? You know, how did it go?
Oh, that brings me to another thing. You know, our calls are recorded for quality assurance. And if I receive an escalation call, like a client that is irate about something, I do pull that phone call and listen. And I, most of the time, have our lawyers' backs because they really handled the situation well. But you can't please everybody all of the time, but you still can validate that person. You know, you have to just, I understand, I wouldn't like that either. How can I do better?
Yeah, that's the best way to go for sure. At the end of the day, you can't, you know, I mean, we're in a different business, of course, but, you know, there's no reason to fight a client or to, you know, try to prove them wrong. It's just not worth it. So for me, I'd rather roll over and say, what can we do better? And what do you want to do? You know, how can we make it right? No matter what, it's just how I handle things. But even though it's not the right thing to do sometimes, like, yeah, the client's wrong. They, you know, but it's not.
Well, if they're abusive or if they're cursing at me or my staff, you know, at that point, I basically say, you know, perhaps you'd be better suited for another firm.
Yeah. Different story for sure when they do that.
Right.
And we've had that happen. We've had law firms that are not good
really?
Clients that we've fired that spend lots of money with us and without even thinking about it. And we're, you know, we just lost XYZ revenue, but that's just a line in the sand. And so, yeah, I totally agree with that. Yeah. You know, at what point do you say, hey, we're not going to deal with this and move on? Your employees will thank you for that. And your employee retention will definitely be better if they don't have to deal with a bunch of a-hole clients all day.
Exactly.
And you're not taking their back, right? So.
Right.
Yeah. Awesome. Love it. Well, I'm sure you can share so much more on the details of your total like process and the journey. But anything else you want to share, I guess, today as far as our time and any kind of tips you leave out there with some managing partners that are, you know, struggling with this area, or maybe they don't have a process in place?
If there's no process in place, I would say put it on your to-do list. You really can't do it by yourself. If you're the one person, if you're a sole practitioner and you're taking every intake call, and you're not going to be able to do this, but put it on your wish list. And as soon as you get a couple employees, you know, there's no rush. Like I said, it took us maybe 5 years in business before we even rolled anything like this out. So just put it on the wish list and it will come.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, you got to start somewhere. And if you're in court all day and you're a solo, I mean, for me, you got to hire a call center, someone that actually, you know, good place that has a real person that is representing you. It's not the best, but it's definitely a good start versus missing the call or not being available. And so again, that starts, like you said, from that first moment. If I call and you don't answer, I might not ever call back. So
right. And you can hire virtual assistants for very inexpensive if you want to start that way. I know when we started, we had one of those executive suites. So there was somebody sitting up front, but you just kind of pay rent and use it as you need.
Yep.
But at least it gave a good impression to the client walking into an office, at least.
I mean, that's the start of your client journey process, really. I mean, I think if everyone's, you know, if you're listening, like, think about what's the small things I can do? Like, I can't afford to do all those things I can't do, but how can I get started to say, if I was a client of my own self, how would I feel? How would I, you know, how would I like to be taken care of? And I'm sure you can find plenty of ways to improve some things. Automation, you know, email responses, things that can be set up, at least, again, when you're starting out, it can be tough. Because once you get busy, boom, like, you're just stuck in the work, you know, and you, right. You drop the ball and all these other things.
Exactly.
I've been there, trust me. I just talked to like two or three attorneys. I've had a lot of attorneys that haven't even left their firms that I'm talking and coaching, literally, as we speak. When they should leave and what they should do and how would they get clients. And, you know, so there's a lot of the conversations that I have on a daily basis, not just with large firms. So, which is cool. I love that. But is there's things like that, like this, they need to think about. But they're also thinking, how do I pay my bills? And how do I get cases? It just doesn't become a priority. And I think if you think about your clients from the beginning, the money will be there and you are going to do well. So
I agree. The biggest takeaway should just be whether you're a one-man operation or you have a staff of 100. If you want to provide good customer service, you have to just think of the word empathy and think how you would feel if you were in that situation calling a law firm. What would you want to hear on the other side?
Love it. Easy. Easy peasy. Get to it, everybody. Well, Stacey, thank you so much for joining me, and thank you for having me on your podcast. It was the Hot Mess podcast.
It is Hot Mess Lawyer. Success of a Hot Mess.
Success of a Hot Mess. Checked out her podcast. I was on it just recently because I'm a hot mess too. And it's cool. Great podcast about being a lawyer, a business owner, having a family, and trying to juggle all that stuff. And I'm right there with you. So I appreciate you having me on.
Thanks, Kevin.
And please reach out if you want to connect with Stacey. Ask me. I can connect the two of you. Appreciate everyone for tuning in, and we will see you soon. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Managing Partners Podcast. If you could just please leave a review on one of our podcast platforms, we would greatly appreciate it. For any marketing help with your law firm, please consider Array Digital at arraydigital.com.